A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So as usual, we will have our Thursday class. Today is the 3rd of September 2020. We are at page 201 of our Heart Sutta. Text edition 2, second edition. We have not finished part 3, so we will go through part 3 of this. Just relax body and mind to have the half an hour of formal meditation sitting. This particular meditation is called awareness based. So you are here to train your mind to develop the stability of awareness or mindfulness leading to heedfulness. Then use that trained mind in heedfulness to meditate. Whenever you are able to silence your mind without any mental chattering or verbalization or thinking, then you are in the meditative state. So meditation is very simple when you understand that. Without thought, you're already aware. Don't have to try to be aware. Just relax, maintain awareness for as long as you can. The first 3 support. And finally, when you are already stable, able to have that mind, then you go for the 4th support, trust. Trust your nature to meditate, don't do anything. Okay, so we will off the light. Then I will set the alarm for half an hour so that you can have your half an hour of awareness-based meditation. Okay, remember, relax body and mind, completely relax, means at ease. Then silence everything and just maintain awareness. And then the meditation will take off. Okay. Now you can be seated, just relax body and mind and maintain some more attention. Then we will continue from where we stop. Turn to page 201, part 3, on meditation. There is a question. Why is it that while in the meditation, I can be at peace with most things, like itchiness, etc., but only not with pain? So this is the question. So if you have developed meditation before, you will know there are certain sensations that are not easy to endure. One of them is pain. Most meditators encounter pain. Then most cultivators doesn't know what to do. Then they use various methods or techniques or skillful means to deal with pain. So in meditation, if you do not have the understanding, then you will try various means. Then sometimes you listen to people giving you advice. They may advise you, okay, if there is pain, the usual traditional one is they will tell you to note pain, pain, pain. So what do you think if you do that? If you are gullible, you will do. And you still believe by doing that, you are doing what they tell you is vipassana. So later we will go through, then you will understand. Then you will start to see, the delusion behind, because the very labeling, the verbalization itself creates the mental hindrance. So when you label a sensation as pain, what happened to that sensation? It becomes a negative emotion. Pain is a sensation that you don't like, you want to do away. So it is an ill will. And ill will is the second mental hindrance. After sensual desire is ill will. So if by labeling and verbalizing you create mental hindrance, what will the mental hindrance do to you? It will prevent you from entering the meditative state, isn't it? So you should actually recognize this fallacy and forget about all those type of skillful means or method and technique. What you should do is to inquire deep into the Dhamma. What did the Buddha actually taught? When you have problems in meditation, if you can recall what the Buddha said, when the mental hindrance has arisen, what does it mean? Means your mind has spurred, reacted, and you have created mental hindrance. So when you create mental hindrance, you cannot meditate. There is a mental hindrance. You are supposed to cultivate spiritual faculties to overcome mental hindrance. But what are you doing? Because you are not taught the usual practice that you develop from outside. You are not explained. The explanation of the Dhamma is not given, or whatever that is given is not clear, not detailed enough. So you become gullible and you don't know what to do. That's the reason why many cultivator couldn't develop the progress. So understanding this, what must you do? Instead of creating mental hindrance, what the Buddha had advised us to do is to develop the opposite five spiritual faculty to overcome it. So when you are meditating, the first thing you have to do is, according to the advice of the Buddha, you have to develop sati, mindfulness, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then only you can use it to meditate, to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. So if you have that understanding and you are focused, you will not go and do all those things. So what you should do is, you should, as advice, relax, maintain awareness. But because you fail to relax, that's how all the sensation or so-called emotion can arise. When you are not relaxed, what happens? The chi cannot flow. And the worst implicating problem is, most people are told to cross leg and sit. It doesn't mean you cannot cross your leg, you can. But when you cross your leg, you restrict the chi flow. And if you are not relaxed, it will build up numbness. It will build up pain. It will build up an unnatural resistance to meditation. So what you need to do is to relax. When you can relax, like the yogi or the yoga people who do yoga, when they know how to relax, they can actually allow the chi to flow through. Then they are very flexible, they are very relaxed. Then they can actually endure the difficult yoga stunt or yoga type of movement or posture that is trying to develop. So all this need understanding and experience. That's the reason why my instruction to you is very simple. Relax, maintain awareness, and let the mind settle down. The mundane mind, the thinking mind, they will start to slow down. Then they will return to their natural state of silence. inner peace, inner awareness, and tranquility within. So that's how you realize the meditative mind, the true mind. Then from there, you start to understand who are you, what are you, that you have two minds. One is the dependent originating mundane mind, or we call it the conditioned arising mind. The other one is the true mind, the true nature within, before the arising of thought, before the stirring of mind, before the movement of the mundane mind arise. So all this understanding need to be developed through meditation, because theory alone may not help you. You have to realize it. You have to understand it through the cultivation, through the practice. So coming back to this situation where the cultivator has problem with pain, but according to the cultivator, he doesn't have problem with itchiness. Sometimes it depends. Itchiness, numbness, and all the other type of what they call meditative problem can also be equally difficult to endure. So now I will read on my answer, then you will understand. So I answer that Kayamita, I say, if you can endure itchiness, you should be able to endure pain, because they are quite similar. It is the result of understanding via meditation. Not being at peace with pain could be due to your inability to relax. Just now I already explained. I read the thing again. It is the result of understanding via meditation. So I will explain that part. Not being at peace with pain could be due to your inability to relax. So this one I have explained. Into it via acceptance. Acceptance is very important. That is, your mind has negative craving to push away that so-called painful sensation that you have labored to be so, hence giving it the strength to become a mental hindrance that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. So that mental hindrance is ill will, because you don't like that sensation. That's why you label it as pain. Your mind wants things your way, means comfortable feeling. Hence, conditioning suffering in the mind when you cannot get what you want, because you want comfort, you want good meditative state, instead painful sensation arise. So what you have to do is you have to silence your mind and investigate, then you will understand what is going on. Silence your mind means completely without words, without verbalization, without doing anything, just silent. Be with that so-called sensation. Then find out. And when you do that, you will be very surprised. That is meditation. You will come to realize there is a very strong craving that want to resist that sensation, that want to push it away, that wants to change your posture or do something to clear the painful sensation. And that is negative craving. So see, understand it. But if I can just let it be, remember the word, let it be. Because according to the Buddha, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions, natural. So like I have explained, after I found out, inability to relax into it caused the qi to be trapped there, and the trapped qi create that type of pulling sensation that transform that sensation into a negative emotion, which most people label as pain. But if I understand that I am not relaxed, then this emotion can arise. If I am meditating, what must I do? I must try to relax into it and find out what happened. Then when you relax into it and don't do anything, what happened? That is the third way that the Buddha taught. Don't do anything. Just be aware. Silence your mind and be with it. Be with it means what? The awareness and the sensation as one. If you don't label it, what happened? There is no mental hindrance in it. When there is no mental hindrance, there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state, true or not. Then what will happen? The mind settle down. Then sati take over the spiritual faculty. If you have developed it before, if you have stabilized your spiritual faculty before, then sati take over. That's how you can endure the pain and feel the silence within. Then when you relax into it, suddenly the qi flow through. Then you realize that silence, which is just aware, will give rise to a nice sensation, which is piti. When there is piti, you find the meditation very soothing, very nice. No longer agitated like before, because you don't create mental hindrance. So when sati take over, you will be very surprised. Your mind become very quiet, very still, very peaceful. Then you can relax into it further. Then you realize all this so-called pain or whatever, when you don't label it and create a mental hindrance, it become endurable. You can endure it. When you can endure it, you don't label it. There is no mental hindrance. That's how you meditate. That's how you clear. But people don't have the understanding. That's why they are not able to develop that type of wisdom to liberate the mind, to develop the correct understanding to meditate. So this lack of understanding has caused a lot of cultivators to get stuck in the painful sensation. Sometimes it could be some other sensation like itchiness, numbness, and various type of uncomfortableness. Then sometimes it's the mental thinking that makes them lack of peace. So when the mental thinking becomes very active, heedless, you find it very difficult to meditate. Then sometimes sleepiness takes over. So all these are mental hindrance. The mental thinking is the sign of a restless mind, a mind that is restless. Restlessness is a mental hindrance. Then the other one is fear, worry, doubt. Then just now I mentioned sleepiness is mental hindrance because it's love and torpor. So sensual desire, you will, when you get attached to good mind state, is the same. You are lost in thought. You cling on to that nice sensation. So craving has arisen. You are no longer in a state of relaxed inner awareness to experience the silence, to understand what is going on, to meditate. So this part is very important. When you can do that, the first two mental hindrances, sensual desire, you where you don't label, you just relax into it and maintain awareness. then sati take over. You become peaceful, you become relaxed, awake. Piti and sukha take place. Then the mind becomes very quiet, very tranquil, and very still. That's how you meditate. And you silent everything after that. That is meditation. And you have to stabilize that silence, that awareness, to realize your true mind, to understand what is going on within your form and mind. So this understanding is very useful. Then when other hindrances arise, it's the same way. You have to act with this type of understanding. Let's say sloth and torpor arise. You feel sleepy, lethargic. What must you do? Huh? What must you do? Find out. I have already explained many times. Can you accept the reality of the moment? Means it's a mental hindrance. Means at that time, my spiritual faculty are not strong. I don't have the virya. I don't have the saddha. And I don't see the beauty of meditation, the importance of meditation. That's why I become sleepy. Like when I attend a class, a lecture, where I don't like the subject, I don't see the importance of the subject, I become sleepy, lethargic. So according to the Buddha, the third way to meditate is the best. Relax into it. Accept it. Do not label it as sleepy or lethargic so that it will become a mental hindrance. Forget about it. No more labeling. Just accept the reality. Do not resist. Means no like, no dislike. Then stay with it. The awareness. Just be with it. Aware. Find out what happened. If you can do that, you will be very surprised. Without resistance, sati take over. Then the shift of consciousness comes. Of course, no sound inside there. All of a sudden, the shift of consciousness come. Then, like there is energy inside your mind, that sloth and torpor or sleepiness suddenly, like disappear, in a flash, is gone. Of course, without sound. Right? Then, there is energy. There is brightness. Then there is virya. That's how you overcome your sloth and torpor. And that one, nobody taught me. I did it on my own, through my own understanding. The book also never run. Yeah. And most people who have gone for retreat, you will know. What does the teacher or the monk tell you when you have that problem? Yeah? Go and wash your face, understand? Or go for a walk. And then after that, come back. The second advice is not so bad. Go for a walk, and then after that come back. But for me, it's very simple. If you understand, you will know what to do. Then you have to find out on your own. If you are tired because physically really tired, you lack sleep and all those things, then what must you do? Go and sleep. Relax into it, go and sleep. Then after that, 5-10 minutes, or maximum 15 minutes, you will revitalize, charge a lot of good energy. Because when you silent and be with it, you will have good sleep, deep sleep. Whenever you are tired, relax into it and silent, you will develop good deep sleep. Then you feel very fresh, very fast. Then after that, sleep, meditate. You will do well. You will have good meditation. So we have gone through pain, itchiness, then sloth and torpor, the hindrance. Then let's say the next one. You got a lot of thought, a lot of thinking. What must you do? The mind is very restless, heedless. You have to find out. Why are you in this way? Why are you not peaceful? Why are you not in a meditative state? So if you have been listening to my sharing, you will have developed the understanding of what the Buddha's teaching is. He said, our mind, without the five spiritual faculties, will arise the opposite five, which is the mental hindrance. And when this mental hindrance arises, it will prevent you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's the reason for your lack of peace. That's the reason why you are not peaceful. You are not aware. You think a lot. You are restless. You are heedless. So what must you do? If you can recall what I shared, you can either, through a skillful means, like mind-sweeping method, feel and relax, no more thinking. Then after that, combine with metta to develop the inner peace leading to the inner well-being. Then if you just feel and relax, it will help you to decondition the heedless thinking and you become very quiet. Then after that, relax and silent. Then you meditate. Then your spiritual faculty take over, sati take over, then stabilize it. But if you don't want to do that, what must you do? The Buddha said, use the third way. Relax, be with it. Just aware. Aware of the thinking. Let things be. No need to resist, suppress, or fight, or focus, or concentrate to do away with the thinking. No. Understand why you think. Because throughout the day, you are not living the heedful life. You are living a life of a heedless person. You are very heedless. You lack mindfulness. You lack awareness. You lack daily mindfulness, sati sampajana. Most of the time, you are lost in thought. Most of the time, at every moment of sense experience, you stir your mind, you react, you create mental hindrance. And the mental hindrance are there to cause your heedless thinking. So understanding this can only arise through mindfulness, awareness, through your ability to see them. Then when you understand, you can meditate. You just let it be. Don't resist. Let the thought arise. So when you do that, what happens? Means you have acceptance. You relax. Don't feed it with any more thought energy. Then what happens? The very flowering of that thought or that emotion is the very ending of that thought and that emotion. So the thinking also needs thought energy. So if you don't feed it with any more thought energy, it will slow down. Like Krishnamurti said, the very flowering of that thought process is the very ending of that thought. So like a flower until full, cannot flower anymore. So the very flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought. Find out. Try it when you meditate. That's how you understand. Then you realize the original state of mind before the heedless thinking or the stirring return. Then you just have the ability to realize the true mind, the silent mind, the inner peace, the inner awareness, the tranquility and the stillness. And that state is so beautiful. And that one is a free mind without you doing anything. Then you just let things be and allow all these things to settle down. So all the mental hindrance you can deal with if you have the understanding. Then of course the last one is doubt. How do you handle doubt when you are not sure? Doubtful, then your thought tell you, what must I do? How must I meditate? Then you doubt that teacher, you doubt that method, you doubt that technique. Sometimes you say never heard before. I want to go and learn from famous monk. or people already say Arahant, enlightened one, then you become gullible. So when you have doubt, you cannot meditate because doubt is a mental hindrance. Why must you doubt? The Buddha already say you must develop sadha, faith in the Buddha and his teaching. So when you have faith in him, means he is a fully enlightened one. He has gone through the cultivation, he has perfected the wisdom and the understanding and the virtue and the perfection. That's how he become a fully enlightened one, not just an enlightened being. And his teaching is so profound and so beautiful, can awaken you. So when you have faith in him and his teaching, you become beautiful. Your mind become very composed, very calm. Then when you see the beauty of his teaching, it will drive you to cultivate. So sadha leading to virya. Then when you have this sadha and virya, you will go all out and cultivate sati to become heedful, ever mindful, constantly meditating. That's how sati and samadhi get developed. So when sati and samadhi get developed, you can see things as they are, insight into phenomena, awaken and develop the wisdom. So when all the five spiritual faculties are there, you got no more mental hindrance. Doubt will cease. That's why to overcome doubt, you must have faith. And to have faith, which is unshakable, you must cultivate. You must do Dhamma investigation. You must investigate the Dhamma until this Dhamma stand up to investigation, then you got no more doubt. You have so much joy. That's it. Because this is the truth, this is the teaching. I investigated into it and it stand up to investigation. Like what I shared with you just now. Go and find out. Do it. That is the meditation. Don't become gullible. Don't not here, not there without understanding. Focus, concentrate. Do this method, that technique. If you follow instruction without understanding, you become gullible. Meditation, like I always said, must be done with understanding. When you understand, you will know how to approach it and develop it. If you don't have the understanding, means what? Trying your luck, becoming gullible, doing all the funny things. And the other aspect of meditation that I like to always comment and share with the cultivator is because people like to go to retreat to cultivate the meditation and all those things. Then I always remind them, you go to the retreat to train your mind so that it can be at peace, so that it can develop the tranquility, the stillness, and the heedfulness to awaken, to develop the awakening and the wisdom, to free your mind. That's what you're supposed to do. But instead, most people went to retreat following instruction without much understanding. They actually suffer while at the retreat because they have to confront pain. They have to endure the heedless thinking, the restless thinking. Then they have to confront the mental hindrance of sloth and torpor, doubt, anxiety. So all this, when it happens, and you are not equipped with the understanding, and you don't know how to meditate to overcome it, you are actually torturing yourself. Then sometimes you become so gullible. You see everybody sit quiet. Dare not move. You also dare not move. And what happened? You actually were in agony, and yet you try to endure. Then sometimes you felt so embarrassing if you release a fuck until they're not even fuck. And that is torturing. So what you have to do is develop understanding. then relax into it. And whatever that is natural, let it happen. So all this understanding can be very useful. Then you go for a retreat to really train yourself and develop the good mind state to be peaceful, to be aware, to have clarity of mind, to have this experience of the spiritual faculty leading to tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind, the true mind. All this develop understanding. Then you experience all of the beautiful essential Dhamma, the seven factors of enlightenment, the five spiritual faculties, the four noble truths, is tree turning. You do Dhamma investigation and everything stand up to investigation. Then you develop faith, sadhavirya, and you are so beautiful. That is meditation. That is going to proper retreat with understanding. But instead, you become gullible. You go there and torture yourself and become miserable, thinking that after so many days, you feel that you are more peaceful. Because you go to a very quiet setting, tranquil setting, a suitable, conducive, meditative environment, most people feel peaceful. If you want to have that type of peace, you don't have to go there and suffer and become agony or pain. You go for a nice tour where the scenery is very nice, the weather is very, you also feel peaceful. You also feel very relaxed and nice. That's why people take leave to go for vacation because they realize their work environment or career environment is too stressful and they need a break. They need to relax. So if you want that type of break, then you don't have to waste your time at this retreat suffering. But most people who know how to go to retreat, they benefited a lot. They gain a lot. So the benefits of meditation is a lot when you understand. But when you don't understand, you become gullible, pitiful, miserable. Okay, so hopefully today, because coming to the second last chapter already, you can understand what is meditation. Now is the time to really give you the whole understanding, the sharing. And then I read on, then we can finish this particular section. You have to silence your mind and investigate. Then you will understand. This is what I mean. So I have explained this. To understand what is going on within your form and mind during meditation. So meditation is to be done with understanding. See? Repeated. And not just to endure the pain without understanding or verbalizing. Inquire. Why am I not peaceful? And why is my mind not silent? Not in a state of awareness. Inner peace, inner calmness with inner clarity and tranquility. Understand the importance of the five spiritual faculties, which I have explained, that are needed to counter the five mental hindrances and the danger of allowing the mental hindrance to float around. Then the answer will come to you through an understanding, and then you will know what to do. Try to just relax into whatever sensation that arises and not label it as such. To see what happens, develop wisdom to free. Always remember, only wisdom free, nothing else. Not the fantastic meditation, not the psychic and whatever fantastic fit that you realize in the meditation. If it doesn't bring about wisdom, it cannot free your mind. It's of no use because suffering can still afflict you. So to be at peace at all times with all people, at all situations, you need wisdom. Without wisdom, you can't. You have to have the wisdom to understand what is going on, then to be at peace with the moment, with the reality. When the reality is, truth is, according to the Buddha, at any one time, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. What is the meaning? Means, at that time, or any one time, the causes and conditions already set. Thing is just the way it is, it has to go this way. Your condition like that, things will like that. So that reality will arise. That's why let it arise, let it unfold. Okay? Accept the reality first. Doesn't mean that you have to agree with what happened. But you have to be within the moment to experience that moment, then accept that reality so that you do not stir your mind, react to it, project your thought to create mental hindrance, suffering and misery. So when you accept the reality of the present moment, you are at peace with it. The acceptance frees your mind. So when you are at peace, there is clarity. There is no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no sorrow, no lamentation, no stirring of mind, no mental hindrance. Then with that clarity and inner peace, you inquire, you investigate what happened. Then how can I act? How can I move? How can I resolve whatever that has arisen or happened amicably so that I can move on with my life? That is the teaching. That is acting with Noble Eightfold Path, with understanding. And the teaching is basically so simple. Whatever happened, accept the reality, be at peace, then act with understanding and wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path. That is the only way out of suffering, no other way. Unless you already enlightened, you have the initial wisdom developed, the stability of panya or wisdom already there. Then at the moment of sense experience, every moment, every instant, that wisdom will prompt you. Spontaneously, it will arise the wisdom and explain to you. Then you will not be gullible. Your mind will not stir and react. That's how you can be at peace. Like when you see something. Most people will have reacted and all those things. But how come you can be at peace? Because the Dhamma will come and prompt you. The initial wisdom, Yonisomanasikara, it will come and prompt you. Sankara anicchang, sankara dukkang, straight away it is. He know you, he know me. Thing is just the way it is. Condition like that, things will be like that. He is just the way he is. Deluded one will act deludedly. Selfish people do selfish things. Angry people do angry things. So all this understanding will surface. Then like my teacher Ajayantra teach, only mighty nature rolling by. No reality. So all this is the initial wisdom that can prompt you and let you understand so that within the moment, you are not deluded. Your mind can liberate and stand above. That's how you can be at peace in all situations. No matter where you are, who do you confront? You can be at peace anywhere, anytime, any place, any situation, and any type of people. No matter what happened to the world, you are still at peace. Because you understand that is the reality. Condition like that, things will like that. If consciousness already evolved, it will move this direction, like our country consciousness and planetary consciousness. So let it evolve. Then with this understanding, you are always at peace. You don't need to get angry, emotional, and go and discuss all those things and go and argue. Especially politics, be careful. Because when you start to analyze reason, you start to argue. Then the division will create misunderstanding, argument and all those things. That's how the world gets itself into trouble. That's how affliction arises, suffering arises, war arises, misery arises. So all this is meditation, Dhamma. When you develop the understanding, your mind liberates. You are not affected. And you can live that type of life with that type of understanding. And that shows clearly to you how beautiful the Buddha Dhamma is. The noble truth that the Buddha has taught us, the essential Dhamma, the teaching, they are all so beautiful, so amazing, and so wonderful. So with this, yeah, I hope you can develop the clear understanding. Yeah? So we end chapter 41. So, oh, sorry, chapter 40, yeah? Lesson 40. Now we go to the next page. Lesson 41. There is this, what they call a title in the commentary. Yeah? Part 2 of Heart Sutta, Lesson 41. Emptying the Four Noble Truths. We actually covered page 91 to page 98. This is based on the commentaries by Master Xuan Huang, the Heart Sutta book. So definition, the Mahayana call it the way, Tao, the way. We call it the path. So Theravada call it the path, Marga. Marga. Pala is the friction. Marga, Pala. Path and friction. So Mahayana call it the way. Then extinction is the term the Mahayana like to use to represent Nibbana. But Theravada prefer the word cessation. So cessation is a more accurate word. It is a matter of the English translation. So when you say extinction, it means everything is extinguished or finished. So means that thing no more exists, extinction. But the real understanding is cessation. The form and mind just cease. And when the form and mind cease, actually the true mind will arise. But when the true mind arises, there is still an awareness inside there. That true mind, that awareness. Because the first thing to come out from the nature, the oneness nature, the source, is awareness, just awareness. Then from the awareness, that pure nature, thought arise, mundane mind arise, creation start. That's how it happened. So if you meditate, you can see all this, you can understand all this. But when it comes to the realization of Nibbana, the complete cessation of form and mind, it means even that pure awareness also cease. The true mind also cease. As the mind realizes itself and go through the cessation, cease. The Buddha called it Nibbana, or when you realize Parinibbana means you won't come back. That is Parinibbana, means after that, no more, cease, finish. Whereas if you realize Nibbana, the form and mind, if it's not time to Parinibbana, then the consciousness can come back and you become alive again. That's how the enlightened beings, especially Arahant and Bodhisattvas, the great beings, they can realize Nibbana, they can go into it. Then when the condition is right, they can arise. The nature can manifest again because they call that Nibbana with residue, means the five aggregates the non-grasping aggregate, they are still there. Their life force is still there. They don't have to end. They don't have to cease through parinibbana. They just cease to realize that thing, understand that thing, then it will arise again. Those who gone through the cultivation develop the ability to have the wisdom to assist the mind, they will understand. Because when you completely awaken, that wisdom, the understanding is very special. It's so different that you will know what to do. Then you will go through that cessation. Then when it arises, only the form and mind that has witnessed the whole thing will understand. Nobody else can understand. That's the reason why the Buddha, under the salutation to the Dhamma, he said, this Dhamma, this realization or awakening or understanding is pachetang. Pachetang means can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. It's the form and mind that go through that cessation, the awakening. Yeah. Only that form and mind arrive. It goes through the whole process. It understands what happened. Yeah. That's why my nature can share with you where it happened to my nature in the year 1989. Then for many times, until the understanding become very clear and very stable. So this cessation is not something you can try to understand or grasp using your mundane mind or thinking mind. You cannot think about it and hope to understand. Because it's the unconditioned. That's why they say you cannot talk about it. The moment you talk about it, it's no longer that thing. Where that one is beyond thought, beyond mind, nothing. No activity, nothing. Everything ceases. That's like the word cessation. That is the correct word. And not extinct. Extinct means that species extinct already. Not like that. Because basically the form of mind is dependent on originating. It's not a real human being. So nothing extinct. Is that thing cease? That is the correct one, cessation. Okay, we go back. Then the next part that we share is the seven factors of enlightenment, satta bhujanga. So these seven mental factors of enlightenment, they are very useful. They are factors of enlightenment. It can make you enlightened. And you need this seven. These seven are the main one, the most powerful and potent one. Whereas in the teaching, there is a total of 37 factors of enlightenment. Those are the sub-division. They expanded on it. That one can also actually bring forth awakening or enlightenment in a certain sense. But these seven are the main one. And these seven, many of them are repeated many times within the 37 factors of enlightenment. I will go through you one more time. This was summarized before we end. Satta Bhujanga. Sati is the first factor of enlightenment. That's why whatever you do, you need sati. For sati is life. Without sati, you cannot understand. You are not sensitive. You have no clarity of mind. What is sati? Sati is mindfulness. And what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is an awareness before the knowing, before the mundane mind coming, before the aggregate of mind arise. That is what sati is all about. That's why it's just aware. Before the knowing, there is sati. And that one can investigate the Dhamma. That one can have clarity, can see, can awaken. That one is wisdom energy. That one can make you sensitive. you can be aware. Because when you are not lost in thought, there is just that nature which is aware. So man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are silent completely without thought and aware, or you are lost in thought, thinking, preoccupied with what you are thinking, then preoccupied with your reaction of mind, your emotion, your stirring, your projection of thought. So when you are lost in thought, you are preoccupied with those mundane mind activity and stirring, how can you be aware? How can you understand what is happening? That's why you cannot meditate when you are heedless. When the mental hindrance are there, when the mundane mind is actively verbalizing, chattering, creating mental hindrance. So all this is very easy to understand when you have developed the understanding of the Dhamma, when you have awakened, when you have developed the training of the mind to be aware. Then you see all this, you understand all this, and you will not be gullible anymore. That's why sati is most important. Without sati, you cannot be mindful. If you are not mindful, you cannot stabilize it to be ever mindful. And you cannot stabilize it to be ever mindful, you cannot be heedful. If you cannot be heedful, how can you be enlightened? The Buddha said the heedless eye is dead. Then without mindfulness, without heedfulness, you cannot investigate the Dhamma. And you cannot have faith because you cannot have the instrument to put it to test, to investigate the Dhamma, so that you can understand whether it stands up to investigation or not. But because the Dhamma is the truth, it will stand up to investigation. That's why this Dhamma, according to the Buddha, is ahipaseko. You can come forward and investigate into it. There is the truth. It will stand up to investigation. So sati is very important. Without sati, you cannot even keep your precept. Without sati, you cannot cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. Without sati, you cannot insight into phenomena. You cannot awaken to the three universal characteristics of nature. Without sati, there is no life. You cannot experience the tranquility, stillness, and clarity of mind. There is no way. So sati is the first factor of enlightenment and is the most important. And I repeat, what is sati? Sati is mindfulness, which is an awareness before the knowing, just aware, sitting as they are, before the thought process, before the perception, the knowing. The moment all this come out, you already lost in thought, created the mundane thinking. The mundane mind has surfaced. That's why meditation is about sati, realizing the silent mind, the true mind, reach the stage of no thought. That is Huineng's first hallmark. You have to go direct to the true mind to meditate. The mundane mind cannot meditate. The mundane mind is ego, think a lot, rationalize, analyze. That one cannot awaken. Only the true mind that is completely silent, without conditioning, without views, opinion, that one can see, can understand, awaken. No need words, no need knowledge, nothing. But he understands how your form and mind is being deceived, conditioned into karmic negativity. How all those suffering, misery come to be. How delusion, condition, grasping and clinging, and attachment, giving rise to suffering and misery. How the fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation and emotion arise. How the selfishness, the greed, the evil arise because of sakkayadity, self-delusion. All this, without sati, Without mindfulness and awareness, a very stable sati, you cannot see. That's why the first factor of enlightenment is very powerful, very important. So sati need to be developed and stabilized. Then once you have sati developed and stabilized, you can use it to investigate Dhamma. That's why the second factor of enlightenment is called Dhamma Vichaya or Dhamma Investigation. Then after that, when this Dhamma Investigation take off, then you come to understand that everything the Buddha teach is so beautiful, so powerful, so clear, and they stand up to investigation. What happened? Your faith in the Buddha is enhanced. You have great faith in him. Yes, this is the teaching that stand up to investigation, and the Buddha is so wise. So when you have that, your sadha will drive you to cultivate, isn't it? That's how virya come to be. So after Dhamma Investigation, Dhamma Vichaya, the next enlightenment factor is virya. And this one, for it to become a what they call a factor of enlightenment, it must reach the state of balas, means power. Virya as power means unshakable virya, unshakable zeal, spiritual zeal and tenacity to go this way, means the heart is resolved. This is the way. This is it. I have to go this way. By sati, stabilize until it's unshakable. Then when you investigate the Dhamma, you stand up to investigate, your faith is unshakable. Then your virya also unshakable. When you have the spiritual faculty developed and unshakable, you sure experience piti. In fact, throughout the day, you are always peaceful, aware, full of joy, full of piti. You feel very nice, very joyful. So piti is the fourth enlightenment factor. Piti is a type of spiritual joy, spiritual calmness. And if it's the first time you experience it, it's like rapture inside your mind. You feel so nice, really nice. Very, very nice meditative state. Without thought, it's just aware. And that feeling is so beautiful, so nice. So we call it a spiritual joy, spiritual calmness. And sometimes the calmness is so strong, so intense, it's like rapture inside your mind. That's why they call it spiritual rapture. Rapture, sorry, I pronounced wrongly. Not rapture. Rapture means break off. Rapture. Oh, rapture is break. Oh, sorry. My pronunciation is totally. So rapture is correct. The mind rapture. But rapture is break off. Okay. I must keep that in mind. Every time I got it, the belly. Then when you are able to experience piti, you continue to relax into it. This part the Dhamma Pope never teach. When piti arises, you continue to relax into it and it become more and more refined. Then it will transform and become sukhang, very blissful, more refined piti. And it becomes very blissful. Then when you experience that bliss, your mind becomes very blissful, very intense. Then everything like slow down. Then if you relax further into it and don't get yourself entangled or attached to the sukhang, don't look for it, then this mind will settle down and become very quiet, very still. Until there is no more movement, until the mind enters sati. When the mind enters sati, it realizes paucity. Paucity is the fifth enlightenment factor. And what is paucity? Paucity is the tranquility of mind, the still mind or the silent mind without thought. That is your true mind. Which means your mind is already trained. Mind has entered sati. Initially, it can still stir because the latent tendency or the anusaya are not completely rooted out as yet. When you experience the enlightenment factor, because you have not awakened, you have not root out completely the what they call anusaya or latent tendency. And the other one is asava. Normally by this stage the asava is gone. The asava are very strong defilement. But the latent tendency that is within your nature is like the habit that you have actually carried latent. No condition cannot arise, no condition only arise. So it can still at times stir the mind. But because you have that tranquility and stillness, you will be able to have more and more moments of peacefulness of mind, silent mind. Then the space between thought will start to lengthen. You start to experience more and more of space between thought. Last time the thought is unending, like proliferating, heedless, non-stop. You think a lot. You want to stop also, you cannot stop. But as you cultivate, as the spiritual faculty develop, you have more and more moments of silence, tranquility, stillness within. That's why not until paucity arise, your daily mindfulness cannot stabilize. Then when you are able to develop the daily mindfulness and stabilize the paucity, until that paucity become very stable, until you can realize that true mind or illuminate your true mind, your true nature, until it's very clear. Then you understand what that thing is. Then you always act from there, aware from there, mindful from there. That is the one that can understand. When you are not there, means you are very likely lost in thought. You are no longer aware. But when you are aware, you're always with your nature. That's why the awareness is very important. So this paucity, you need to stabilize it until very, very stable. Then after that, it will understand by itself. It will awaken by itself. So paucity will lead to samadhi. Samadhi is the sixth enlightenment factor. When the mind becomes very quiet and very still, and this one is a free mind, not in concentration. So this samadhi is not concentration. This samadhi is the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind. Means this mind does not stir anymore. When you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel or think of something, this mind that has samadhi does not stir anymore. It is collected and unwavering. That's why you can see things as they are. So the direct seeing come about when the samadhi is there. Then the interference from the brain, the views, opinion, and the conditioning, and the belief system, all these things, all this rubbish cannot come in anymore. Because the awareness is so clear. The samadhi is so stable. The interference from other things cannot stir the mind, cannot cause it to waver. Then it can see things as they are. Then it knows, before the word coming, before the concept coming, thing is just the way it is. That's why nothing. That's why I see mountain is not mountain. Real mountain is the word created by the mundane mind. That's why you see things as they are. The reality, the truth. Then you understand. Before you perceive, thing is just the way it is. No word. You cannot label. That's why you see truth. You see the reality. Suchness, condition like that, things will be like that. All the nature's movement and nature's flow. Everything is suchness. Ta-ta-ta. You're able to see things as they are. That's how wisdom keep on arising. So when sati, paucity and samadhi fall into place, you keep on seeing things as they are. You keep on awakening. You keep on developing the realization that when the wisdom become very stable, very, very stable, then the last factor enlightenment arise, upekkha. This upekkha is not a conditioned state. not the one in the fourth jhana. The fourth jhana also upeka, but that one is not the enlightenment factor. That one is a conditioned mind in one-pointedness. It's conditioned to be in one-pointedness without thought. It can also see things as they are, but it cannot awaken. Yeah? All the mental hindrance are suppressed. The delusion, everything. Because the mind is not a free mind, it's a conditioned mind. So you need to release all this concentrated mind state into the free mind. Then develop the daily mindfulness to awaken. That's why without sati, without the daily mindfulness, you don't stand a chance. So now I read the seventh factor of enlightenment, the last one, upekkha, you understand. This one is equanimity of mind born of wisdom, not a conditioned state. Means no more grasping or clinging and stirring of mind and feeling at the moment of sense experience. Contact will remain at the moment of contact. Feeling will remain as pure feeling. And so the moment of sense experience upon contact, feeling will remain as pure feeling. Where there is wise attention or yoniso manasikara. Similarly, for perception, sankara, consciousness, etc. So here, one word missing. Oh, yeah, it's here. Feeling at the moment of sense experience or sense door contact will remain as pure feeling. Ah, correct. Yeah, that word is there. Similarly, for perception, it's the same. When you perceive something or think of something or will become conscious of something, there is equanimity there. Yeah, that wisdom, that understanding will actually liberate the mind. That's why when you have this upekkha enlightenment factor, you can be at peace anywhere, any place, anytime, under any circumstances. You don't have to depend on your samadhi, don't you? You don't have to be a conditioned state. You don't have to suppress your emotion, yan and focus. No need. No need, jhana, nothing. Then I read on. For the arahants, their five aggregates of form and mind are pure aggregates and non-grasping because of their wisdom. Their mind cannot get into trouble anymore, because the arahant are no longer deluded. Understand the non-self or anatta nature of our form and mind, then there will be no more delusion to condition us into suffering. That's why I always say, hey no you, hey no me. No one born, no one die, no one sick, no one old. Why? Because the form and mind is not a permanent, unchanging entity. That one, dependent on condition, it arises. It's dependent, originating, condition, arising, causal phenomenon. It's a phenomenon sustained and supported by condition. The three conditions, you remember, I explained? The life force, the consciousness, trapped inside, and the physical body that function. Once any of these is not performing the function, the condition ceases to be, it was separate and the form and mind is gone. And we call it dead. Actually, no one died. No one sick, no one old, no one born. Why? Because the consciousness that separate that thing is not a permanent unchanging entity, not a being. So how can he die? No one died. It's just separation of consciousness from the form. And the life force no more to sustain the heartbeat, to sustain the nourishment to the organ. When the heart cannot pump, what happened? Consciousness has to separate, where the organ all will fail. So understand all this and see it in your own form and mind. That's why this line, my nature, went through a lot of things. I saw all these things, and when I was young, I think about 10 years old, my consciousness, the craving for cease, then it come out. And I saw the whole thing. Then it cannot go in. Then how I give it a push and I manage to go in. That's how I understand the form and mind. That's how I understand all the true mindfulness awareness. I saw all this movement. I saw the whole Patichasamuppada and the fundamental truth and all the beautiful teaching of the Buddha, the essential of the mind, all can be realized and understood within the form and mind. That's why this my investigation is so fun, so beautiful, so wonderful. So this final chapter is the one that can actually bring forth the understanding. That's why I want to share with you all more on all this thing. Okay, we go back to the last part. Okay, I will read the whole section on the Arahant again. For the Arahant, their five areas of form and mind are just pure aggregate and non-grasping because of their wisdom, upeka. So for the unenlightened being, putujana, they are called grasping aggregate. That's why they are called upadana khandas. So upadana khandas are called grasping aggregate. So the Buddha under the first noble truth final summary, he said in short, it is your attachment to the five areas of form and mind that I call dukkha. Means due to your self-delusion, you grasp and cling onto the five aggregate of form and mind. The upadana khandas is dukkha. So that one is very clear. Their mind cannot get into trouble anymore because the arahant are no longer deluded or gullible. Understand the non-self or anatta nature of all form and mind. Then there will be no more delusion to condition us into suffering or dukkha. When your grasping arise, you cease to have the enlightenment thought. And this one is very beautiful. They say, when you try to grasp, cling and hold on to things, you already deluded. That's why you cease to have the enlightened thought. Means the yonisomanasikara, the wisdom thought, the one that can give rise to understanding to prompt you. You don't have that. The arahants still have outflow of thought, but no more ignorant. The wisdom is enough to liberate them from birth and death of their segmented life. That is the five areas of form and mind. They actually will not be undergoing rebirth through ignorance. But as a bodhisattva, they can come back with a free mind, with the pure mind of love and compassion through their vows. There are four basic vows of the bodhisattva. So all this understanding is very beautiful. The arahants still have outflow of thought is because their mundane mind haven't ceased. So to have the cessation of outflow of thought, you need to go the bodhisattva way. You need to cultivate until your mundane mind collapse. And when your mundane mind collapse, there is no more outflow of mundane mind, the thought. Then you become like that nature shine forth. That's why for that type of cultivation, you need to go through the bodhisattva way. And that one even for the bodhisattva to have the ability, you have to reach quite advanced level of bodhisattva shape cultivation or bodhisattvahood cultivation. According to the Theravada teaching, Mahayana teaching, they got 10 grounds of perfection to become Sammasambuddha. So you have to reach the 7 or 8 grounds before you can have the ability to realize the mundane mind collapsing. Actually, it's not easy. You have to reach the 4th stage of Bodhi mind development, where you can renounce samsara. Actually, the 3rd stage also very powerful already, where you can illuminate your nature clearly. Bodhi mind that illuminate the nature clearly. So once you can do that, then you can renounce samsara, which is the next stage. Then you will know, oh, my mind not real, not what you think. Then you can calm for eons and eons and eons of birth and death. You will not worry anymore. You will not go and think, oh, you will take so long. You know, there's no reality. With that type of wisdom and understanding, then when you come, you can connect back very fast and realize the teaching and the understanding. And everything is so beautiful. Then especially when you reach those stages of cultivation, chances is every life you come, you will connect and your mundane mind will collapse. And sometimes, some of these beings, they are very unique, like Hui Ning. They are born without the mundane mind. they can have that type of understanding and perfection. The moment they come, they are without the mundane mind. And these are very rare. These are very special beings. So in the spiritual field, the spiritual cultivation, there's a lot of very amazing and wonderful things. You will meet up with a lot of cultivators, the great beings that are very unique, that have very unique understanding and perfection. That's why the cultivation is unending. Wisdom is unending. You cannot see you have realize them all. Of course, there is a word they call perfection of wisdom, prajna paramita. Yes, that one can be done. But when it comes to true wisdom, means evolving life, evolving civilization within the condition, that wisdom cannot end. It's unending because civilization keep on evolving, understand? New things keep on happening. It's like technology. How can you say I have learned everything about technology? Cannot. Because as you evolve, new understanding arise, new things arise. Maybe technology or the way we live life or the way we evolve, our consciousness, our understanding, all different. It depends on the civilization, the universe, the evolution that they go through. That's the reason why in this universe of ours, there are a lot of possibility. Some of the living beings, they are very advanced. That's why they are called star beings. Star beings. Means they can actually travel not only interplanetary, intergalaxy. Then they can actually move around the universe like nobody's business. Because they have penetrated their evolution. They have break beyond the frontier of a lot of things, not only science, even in the field of occult and in the field of consciousness, awareness. Now that field is very major. And that field of consciousness and awareness, our civilization has only touched the surface. We haven't gone in deep. Except all those beings, special beings, the great beings, those who come, they know all this are there. But the condition world is still the condition world. Our planet is still our planet. But our planet, Earth, Mother Earth, is very unique, really very, very unique and very beautiful. So as you go into this spiritual cultivation, spiritual practice and cultivation, you will come to understand on your own many, many things, many, many possibilities. And life can be really wonderful, amazing, beautiful. As your nature evolve, you will learn more and more. You will understand more and more. What's the time now? Oh, Ben Ben. Okay, I think we can end here so that the next lesson we can go into 2.2, which is the form number 2. So this form number 2, next Tuesday, I will go into it in more detail. And you all can also read about it and ask me questions because this is the final chapter. You want to learn, you want to know, you better ask. And I find it, this way of sharing the Heart Sutta is much better than the usual retreat 8 or 9 days, where everything you have to compress or rush through to finish, where that time was to impart the understanding. That's why all the recording, everything very useful. That's why they are all in the website. But I don't know how many people really went in and listened. But this MCO was a blessing in disguise. All this recording with the short video, I tell you, is going to transform the understanding of cultivator very, very deeply. And a lot of people is going to benefit from it and progress. They will develop deep understanding. Even today, my sharing, later on, cultivator who has progressed, they listen again. They will understand the deep message that is inside there. Quite a few things that I discussed today, I never described it before because people are not ready. Condition is not there. So now it's different. Conditions are there. Some kayamita has moved, penetrated. They can understand. And all this can unfold. That's a unique condition for all these things to come out. Okay, so with this, I think let's rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, Adeline, yes. Yeah, sadhu.
Can I ask a question?
Can Adeline? Yes.
Regarding just now the pasadi factor.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, usually maybe in the retreat, maybe in the midst or almost the end of the retreat when our sati is more stable.
Yes.
And maybe in the meditation we can have a glimpse of that.
True. What you say is true. Yes.
Yeah. So
what is your question?
How to stabilize it? Is it same as like how we stabilize our
sati? Yeah, that is a very good question. Yeah, that's a very good question.
Yeah, from the mind, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Adeline. That's a very good question. How can we stabilize pasati? I already explained before, actually, but because today I didn't share it, and you all may not be able to get it. You remember last time I used to share with you all, when you meditate, whether you go through methods or technique or anapanasati or whatever object of meditation, what happens when your mind becomes very quiet, very still? When your object of meditation, like the breathing, becomes very subtle, no more breathing. Even your object of meditation, like rising, falling, like hardly aware, you cannot get it anymore. Can remember? My instruction to you is what? Don't go and do all those funny things that they tell you to do. Because there is a very common teaching, I think, based on the certain tradition. They say when everything becomes very quiet, then you cannot like be mindful of it. You go and do sitting touching. Go to the feeling. Go to do sitting and touching. Please find out for yourself. I don't want to really comment. Because if you do that, what are you doing? You are creating more thought. You are using the thought to do. Who is doing? Who is going to the sitting and touching? When thought is active, you disrupt pasati. When the breathing or whatever object of meditation become very subtle, don't do anything. Stay with it. Silence your mind and stay there. Find out what will happen. You can just silence your mind and stay there and don't do anything. Don't be curious. Don't go and think what happened. Am I not breathing? Am I going to die? Then you project your thought, fear arise. Projection of thought arise. Then how can you meditate? That paucity is a very beautiful state. And you have progress. But people don't understand. That's why my nature understand. I know what to do. Nobody taught me. I just silence everything. Then I realize, when I do it for a while, the mind enters speed. Then after that, every movement become like magnified. The subtle breathing that I already cannot be aware of, suddenly become clear again. And I can be aware of it. Because I came to realize when the mind enters sati, your sati become more refined. No longer the gross sati. It's like very fine. Then it enter tranquility, stillness, silence. It realizes that nature. Then it understand what that nature is. That's how the mind enters sati. Then when it enters sati, everything like magnified. Then I realize whatever I do, my mind is aware. That's why when I'm in the sitting, all the slightest movement, even when I adjust my backbone to straighten myself, that very slight movement is like magnified. Then like the awareness is like so easy, so clear. And every moment, every step is like normal people can't even notice what happened. But this one is like the whole thing is slow down for you, like slow motion. Ta 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 ta. Of course, no sound. Huh? Like the whole thing is so smooth. Awareness and that thing move as one. Then I realize the subtle breathing come back. Then I can stay there. They say I can be at the subtle breathing. Like no breathing, but it's internal breathing. Then I realize this mind after that, wherever I locate it, it becomes sensitive. It can be aware. If I go to the heart, it can stay there. That's why it can be aware of the heartbeat. No need stethoscope, nothing. Then everything becomes very subtle. Everything slow down. Initially, the pounding of the heart is like very loud. Pum-ha, pum-ha, pum-ha. But later on, it slow down. Then it becomes very quiet. Then sometime, like Pujang went through, the heartbeat also cease, no more heartbeat. Yeah. But yet the awareness is there, very clear. Then this one is different. Yet this one is the mind that has entered sati. That paucity has stabilized. Then after I come out, I realize everything I do is in sati. Within the kaya, my hand movement, my leg movement, my bodily movement, everything is like the awareness of the mind and that kaya move as one. Then when I see, I hear, it's all in sati. Specific phenomenal awareness in sati. The hearing also, specific phenomenal hearing in sati. Smell also in sati. The smell becomes so clear. Like break down into very fine thing. Then the anapanasati become very clear. Even the subtle, like hardly any breathing, becomes so clear inside that. It's like magnified. Everything is magnified. That's why you become sensitive. Clarity. You understand. That is how you stabilize your paucity. Then go into the formal meditation. Let it stabilize until very, very stable. That's why I say don't try to know. Like watching. Half an hour, 1 hour without thought. That is how you stabilize. Just aware. Aware. Then everything quiet, still. That's how you stabilize. Okay, Adeline, can follow? Adeline, yeah.
Yes, yes, Roger, thank you. Yeah, that reminds me again, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I have said, but you all don't know how to connect it because that is the way to do it. And paucity is an enlightenment factor where very few people understand, even monks, cultivator, you can ask them. I don't think really there is any particular one that really understand. Maybe they have their own understanding in their own way. But the real one, not easy. Unless you have that real cultivation. You have gone into it. Otherwise, it's not easy to understand all this. Because these are words. And the danger of word is, when they use Dhamma word, it sounds like same, understand not? Then when you hear tranquility, stillness, paucity, wow, you think it's the same. But if you have that understanding, you listen, it's completely different world apart. Because the understanding of it is very different. Because when you understand, when you go through, you are very precise. Precise in the sense that those who don't have, they borrow words and describe, they cannot understand because their description will actually contradict themselves. I don't want to use the word backfire. They contradict themselves. Then you will understand that they don't have the real understanding. They have not gone through that thing. That's why they cannot describe it. Then sometimes they just use the word. So cultivation, you have to really, really have the faith. Then you silence your mind and investigate and awaken and realize yourself. Whatever you investigate through your own silent mind, you will understand. It's no more knowledge. It's no more acquired experience from people. So the real understanding comes from your own cultivation. Nobody else can actually teach you. Like the Buddha said, he can only show you the way. You have to walk the path yourself. Cultivation needs to be done individually. So it's not something that they can teach you. They can share the understanding with you. But you have to walk the path yourself. You have to realize yourself. You have to awaken yourself. Because this one is a cultivation, it's not a practice. It's not a stereotype thing, a rigid thing, where you practice, then you become very skillful. No, because it's a wisdom. Wisdom cannot be practiced. You understand it? How can you practice wisdom? Well, wisdom is not rigid. It's not 1 + 1 = 2. Very rigid, straightforward. Wisdom is an understanding. And the condition behind everything that happened and arise is so different. So, how can you learn wisdom? It's just like the example I used to share with you. When you ask me a meditation problem or life problem or whatever, then when a certain people with certain character come and see me, then they have their first number two reality problem. Then I approach them in the way I understand and I teach them to do that. And if you go and copy what I do, you know what happened? Hey, I think I know what to do. Brother Theo last time asked her to ask for forgiveness. Avoid all evil, follow the advice of the Buddha. Then after that, invoke power of merit for turnaround. And you go and apply the same thing. That is rigid, because you don't understand her past, her condition. Sometimes the karmic that bring about this thing is very different. You need to approach it differently. Even asking for forgiveness got so many forms and so many types. So many possibilities. That's why wisdom cannot be learned. How can you learn it as a knowledge? when you have this type of problem? Oh, divorce? Oh, Brother Teo say like that. Cannot. Oh, you say, the Buddha teach, let things be. See things as they are. All these words got no meaning. That's why wisdom need to be realized and understood. It's not a rigid knowledge. You cannot just copy and apply. That one is knowledge. Wisdom is an understanding. Condition like that, things will be like that. And condition can be so different. Because living beings are different. Civilization are different. Character are different. Karmic paths are different. And so many things happen. The totality of consciousness. Everything. And how can you develop understanding without wisdom? Cannot. That's why to act with wisdom, unless you really have that wisdom, you don't know how to act. You become rigid. You become gullible. Because a lot of people, I realize, they just quote me, Ibrahim Teo say, let things be, you don't keep on. What I mean is not like that. Let things be, mean at that moment, understand? But that reality of the moment is already fixed, suchness. That is the reality. Condition like things like that means let things be, accept the reality first. But then you have to move, understand? Doesn't mean that let things be, don't do anything. No, they go into prayer as don't do anything. No. That's the reason why I always remind Kayamita, don't quote me and become gullible and do all those rigid things. And they somehow very convincingly, hey, but you say, let things be, you don't go and kepo. How can you learn? That's why wisdom, I cannot teach you. Every condition, everyone is different. Every occasion is different. Every incident and life situation is different. Even today and tomorrow is so different. Kayanamita is so different. Everyone is so different. Even your own brothers and sisters and your parents, you go and check. Their character are so weak. Their karmic path is so different. Life is not what you think. Life is evolving. Nature's law is very, very complex. That's why the Buddha said the law of karma is the most complex. You need a great being. Especially a Sammasambuddha to have full comprehension and understanding. Otherwise, you can only know to the extent you have developed the wisdom and understanding. That's the reason why during the Buddha's time, certain type of, you call it disciple, or certain type of devotee, or monks, under training, under Sariputta, Moggallana, they cannot see that far. They teach differently. There was an incident, I remember. Sariputta taught everybody has certain type of paths that require them to actually develop the object of meditation to meditate accordingly. So there was one monk who actually failed to develop the meditation. Every time Sariputta gave him an object of meditation, he find it not interesting, and he cannot develop it, Then finally, the Buddha came to know. Then the Buddha checked, using his Sammasambuddha knowledge and understanding or wisdom. And then he checked. He realized this guy, for the past 500 life, he was a goldsmith's son, and nothing can interest him except gold. So what the Buddha did was, he said, come. He told this man. He gave him a golden Buddha image to meditate. He used his psychic to create one and give it to him. Wow, this monk was so different after that. He got so much saddha virya that he meditate very well. the nine great virtue, everything come to him because he let go. Then when that moment, the Buddha knew that it's right for him to awaken and become an Arahant, he uses his psychic to cause the golden Buddha to degenerate. Then within that moment, he awakened to the direct sea. His nature realized a golden, beautiful Buddha Rupang can also degenerate. Means there is no permanent unchanging entity there. Then he realized Rupang Anicang, Rupang Anatta, Vedana Anicang. He became Arahant straight away. So along with this understanding, you have to understand. Unless you are the Sammasambuddha, you cannot see that far. So a lot of monks during the Buddha's time, he teach them very funny type of meditation object. There was another monk, very strange. He can't even remember one stanza. So how to learn the Dhamma? The moment you speak the stanza, next moment he forget already. So he cannot cultivate. So what happened was, the Buddha checked. He knew coming obstruction. That's why he taught that monk to do all those things that he need to do. Very likely he teach him to ask for forgiveness and all that. Then after that he said, okay, since you are of that condition, no need to learn any stanza, no need to chant, no need to do anything. He just gave him a white cloth. He said, take this cloth, go and clean it up. You know what happened? This monk, because he cannot even remember a stanza, so this simple thing he can do, understand? Clean it out. So what he do? He go and wash it, understand? But he realized the more he wash, the more he do to make it clean, it become more dirty, understand? It was a clean, pure silk, understand? Then all of a sudden, he awakened and become Arahant. Do you know how it was possible? It's because he realized the more you wash, the more dirty it become. Originally, it was already pure silk, clean, understand? Then he realized that mind was not there. The more he think, the more he analyze, the more he reason, more problem. The more he doesn't do anything, like cannot understand anything, there is clarity, there is understanding. That's how the Buddha teach. And it's very different. So these are the way you can develop understanding. Okay? So this is something for you all to take home and maybe develop good understanding. Let us thank Adeline for the good condition and the question. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, I think 10:33 already, we have to end. Otherwise, too late. So, if you have any question, you can text to me, or you can maybe ask the next session. You can write it down. The next lesson, next Tuesday, is Four Noble Truths, Three Turning. You can prepare yourself so that we can have a very good discussion. But this is the last chapter already. We have to go into it. Okay.
My daughter is here.
Because normally when we have this type of silence, I think the mind tends to become very noisy. Actually, even though we are silent outwardly, inside there's a paisera, embarrassed lah. Or if nobody say anything, then it become awkward lah. Maybe someone should do something lah. All these thoughts are actually in the mind. Then I realize these are actually the negativity of mind state. These are the ones where we can observe the wrong thoughts. These are all the wrong thoughts: embarrassment, boredom, loneliness, disappointment. These are the what we don't normally list as wrong thoughts. We normally list anger, greed, selfishness. But the more subtle ones are all these embarrassment, boredom, loneliness. So actually, these are the good times to reflect. When I don't say anything, or when I want to say something, what's the thing that is conflicted inside there? Something say I should say something, but something say paisei, don't say anything. This, the mind is actually very active, and it's a very interesting contemplation. When we are all silent like this, this is something to share.
Which is very good and very true. You see, what my daughter observed and saw is this ample, subtle, chatter, relation, and dialogue among yourself. So like you say, the Hokkien word is I say, but the English word just now she used was embarrassed. So previously I already asked the employer, who is embarrassed, who is paisei? The thought, shy, not embarrassed, you know, to say paisei, like shy. Who is shy, who is paisei, who is embarrassed? It's the egoic mind. What is important is when you can recognize that you feel lonely, bored, like my daughter said, these are all the subtle evil roots. Like aversion, unhappy, very slight dislike. When you are mindful, when you are sensitive, you can feel them. You realize all these are not useful, not beneficial. Then why do you realize them? It's because habitual. Or as you understand, you start to straighten your view and it loses power. Why do I keep on repeating all this? I have not changed. I have not straightened my view. But every time you I say, I don't want to, you share, I don't want to share, I cannot. Who is saying all this? Why can't you investigate, reflect, and ponder, then understand who I am, what I am? Who is saying all this? These are habitual tendencies, egoic mind, that arises all this egoic mindedness. These are not conducive for cultivation. These are not some, these are not right thoughts. That's why there is this two book. I hope to finish it soon. I have sent it for relative to generate the what they call the indexing, the concentration. And hopefully after it's finished, I will clean up the thing, because we did some spelling check and not really editing, what you call proofreading. So, two books are on Magma. I think it's very useful in my early years of cultivation during the early 80s. I got all this free booklet. At that time, the copy, the version was very poorly printed, small words and all. But I like the message inside there, I underlined them and all. And later on, when I came out to share, I realized the early law of man, until my mind state was so beautiful. And I realized all this meta, together with the Dhamma understanding, root out all those thinking. I cannot like think like last time, have anxiety, worry, unhappy, like feel bored. That's why I realize every moment is so beautiful, so pristine. The reality is we miss so much of life. Life is full of all those beautiful, pristine things. But we keep on going back to memory, going back to habitual tendency. The egoic mind is still active. You are not using the true mind to live life, to experience life, to experience the moment, the reality. You are not quiet most of the time. You are not mindful and aware. That's why you cannot focus on others. So don't be shy. Don't be paisei. Or don't be, just now the word is not that. Embarrassed. There is the thought, the egoic mind. Okay, look it out. Then be confident. That's why I say learn to share. Initially, you may not do well. Never mind. Better is sharing. Like learn to speak up, public speeches, or speak out in the meeting, the discussion. If you don't do that, you cannot learn. You cannot express your idea, your understanding. And you cannot express, the understanding cannot deepen, cannot stabilize. That's why you need to go into it. Those who have gone through the working life, they will know. Some people in the meeting, they dare not speak. They can't even actually, and because too many people, so sometimes they got something they want to say that they find it very difficult to say, well, they are not sure, they have fear, they have anxiety, and they Pisces can't say wrong thing, people laugh at them. All this is going to actually cause you to lag behind. You never learn. That's why I say train yourself. Speak up, share. Don't worry about right and wrong. Mistake. Everybody, when they start, they make mistakes. But as you do it, you learn. Become more confident. Then you start to develop the ability to express it better and better, clearer and clearer. That is what life is all about. If you keep on hiding the way being conditioned by your egoic mind not to express yourself, not to come out and share because the fear, the embarrassment, and what they call shame and honesty, then you become miserable. You are trapped in your own cocoon of learning and misery, unhappiness. And these are all the subtle defilements. They are all evil, wrong thoughts. They are not logical, not wisdom. When you have developed the understanding, always tell yourself, it's my time to share now. It's my time to help people. It's my time to stabilize my understanding. Yes, I learn to express myself. I learn to share. This is what you must develop as understanding, as cultivator. This will help you go along with. So this will hopefully do away with all the Pisces condition so that more Kayanamita can speak out. And more Kayanamita can help them more to really express things. And then we learn from each other. This should be the way. Okay? Hopefully with this, everybody can learn. Do you all agree or not? Somebody answer.
Yes,
I want to say the let us read that. Very good. Oh, CF thumbs up. Ah, this is a good response. This is active Dhamma discussion. Otherwise, every time we for Brother Theo to speak, I don't mind speaking, but I need condition. Like today, Adeline asked very good question. So if you write to condition, then my daughter share something. Then from there, I can share with you because the condition is. So this is how you can contribute. Not by being embarrassed, shameful, crazy, and all those things. So learn to walk out of that egoic mind trap. I call it egoic mind trap. So when you can walk out of those egoic mind trap, you straighten your view, then you develop more and more silent awareness, more and more virtuous thought, right thought. And through your own understanding, after you reflect and contemplate, after you cultivate by putting Dhamma into practice in daily life, you become deeper. Then you can be useful, blessing to all. That's how you move. Don't be shy. Express it now. Okay? So, let us rejoice one more time. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.